Live from the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Todd Albaugh, along with our producer and engineer, the outstanding Mr. Aaron Zommers on the board. It is 6 minutes now past the hour of 1 o'clock on Thursday, January 4th, 2024. Welcome in to hour two of the big show. Our thanks to Luke Mathers, our executive producer here at Civic Media, who normally joins us on Tuesday, and we thank him for coming in. What he feels, even not 100%, but even a 70% Luke Mathers, you understand, Mr. Zommers, is still better than most guests.
70% Luke is, I would say, certainly better than 0% Luke, but also, yes, better than 100% of many people.
Yes, no, he's fantastic. We appreciate him making the effort. And thanks for all these great calls on, again, this very complex immigration issue. And I agree with most of the callers last segment, that by and large, the problem falls on the Republicans for making too much political hay out of it. But I just want to make sure that we are clear that over the course, and Luke's pointed this out, other callers pointed this out, the immigration challenge in this country is complex and deep. It's not just a matter of building a wall, quote unquote. It's not just a matter of keeping people out, quote unquote.
It's also not just a matter of, sure, let everybody walk on in.
Totally agree. I am not for an open border. One of our texters here, this is somebody listening out in Maine. I'm assuming the state of Maine, but tuning in on the app of EWAUK. This is Andrew from Maine, says, quote, why can't we create a system that allows individuals to enter the country through clearly identified ports and offices, apply for residency, and eventually apply for citizenship, regardless of how they arrived? We don't necessarily have to be as welcoming and lax as the indigenous population when the European immigrants arrived, but with the current technology and funds available, a workable solution should be obtainable, unquote.
Well said, I think.
Very well said. And yeah, I'm for that. I'm not for just a willy-nilly open border. Anybody can go in and out. But I am for a system that makes sense. And again, I've come to this position over the course of 30 years, much of that time working at federal and state politics and government. I have been in line at the U.S. Embassy in El Salvador and stood next to friends who are awaiting a visa application or approval. And, you know, when I'm in El Salvador, is if I get a little bit of a tan and I don't open my mouth and reveal my poor Spanish, I can kind of pass for Salvadoran. People don't necessarily look at me as, quote unquote, an American. So you hear a lot of things. And I have been at the window. Now a lot of it's all electronic, but you used to have to go and stand in line for hours out in the hot sun, and you get up to a window, and this person has waited for months to come legally, do it the right way. And I have witnessed with my own eyes, people at the U.S. Embassy say, nope, that's wrong. I'll come back in 6 months. Boom. And they say, the applicant says, but I did it this way and you told me to come back 6 months ago. And they say, hey, you want to make another 6 months? Get out of here. I mean, again, I don't want to stereotype and say every person is treated that way. But I saw this on more than one occasion with my own eyes. And my point is, we need a consistent immigration policy that can help folks immigrate here, both visitors and immigrants legally, but is easily understood and that's fair and consistent. People are, most people, not all, but a lot of most people are willing to wait and do it legally if it makes sense and they know they're being treated fairly. But after trying to do it legally for 6 months, a year, 2 years, 3 years, eventually, like, you know, I just want to go hang out with my friends in whatever city in the United States and get a job at a restaurant. So they pay a coyote, as they call it, a person that takes them across illegally, pay them whatever it is, $500 or whatever it is now. And they come and they work. So if you want to address the immigration problem, it's super complex, and you have to be willing to have an open mind and say, first and foremost, as Reagan and Bush said, We have to do things in the countries through diplomacy and through foreign aid to help democracies grow, to provide better quality living conditions so that not as many people want to leave, number one. And then we have to have a system that makes sense and is fair and consistent so that people will use that system. And then, yes, you combine it with enforcement at the border and doing it all with compassion. And see, most people don't want to look at it that way. And oh, by the way, this is going to cost money. So you have to be willing to put the money in Congress and pay for this. You can't just say, I'm going to build a wall.
That also costs money and doesn't really do anything.
It does not address the problem.
At all.
And guess what? As Jorge Ramos, the great author and telecaster on Univision, likes to say, he wrote a great book about this. He said, you know what? You can build as many and high walls and deep walls as you possibly want. But until you start addressing the problem within countries, people will keep coming. Because guess what? The American dream lives around the world. It's not just for my ancestors from Czechoslovakia and Germany. It's also from folks from Central and South America and Africa and Europe. They're going to keep coming because the American dream is alive. And I'm happy about that. I'm happy that people still, for all of our faults, there's a lot of them, people still look at America as that shining city on a hill and want to come here and have an opportunity. And I believe that makes us stronger. 844-967-2789. There we go. 844-967-2789. Matt, listening in Middleton on WMDX. Matt, thanks for holding. What's up?
Hey, Todd. So I got a little story. I lived in Texas for 10 years, and I was courting my ex at the time, and I got to spend a day with her grandfather, who is a conservative businessman in Fort Worth, Texas, worth a couple million. And he takes me out for the day, and he wants to show me his commercial properties. He builds these little buildings, and he picks up two illegal immigrants off the street, pays them each $100 for the day to work his property. And only one of them spoke English. But while we're spending time together, we drop them off to do the work for him, and then we're talking, and he of course goes on and on about how bad unions are and all the problems, but I think that's why it's never going to get solved, especially by conservatives, because they're hypocrites and a lot of them profit from it. They use it politically. Donald Trump has shown us that at least 30% of the country hates immigration and doesn't want anyone coming here. But the hypocrisy is just insane. Mm-hmm. And his wife, who loves Mexican food, we'd be at a restaurant eating Mexican food and she'd out of one mouth be smiling and then she'd be complaining about all the Mexicans.
Wow. Wow.
There's a lot of hypocrisy, and I think that's why it never gets solved. They want to continue to use the cheap labor, and I think that's why there's so much Latino support for Trump now, because they don't want the competition of more illegal immigrants, and they don't want the competition for the cheap labor. So don't see how it gets solved.
I really appreciate the call, Matt. Thank you so much for calling in, Matt from Middleton. Matt raises a very interesting point. For those who listen to the show for a long time, I have a lot of Latino friends. I have Latino family. And, you know, I've been to El Salvador 39 times over the last 30 or so years. So I have a pretty close personal connection with this issue. And I was talking to one of my friends who lives in California. He immigrated here. He is now a U.S. citizen. And I was asking him over the Christmas holiday, I said, explain to me Latinos voting for Trump. And he kind of echoed what Matt just said. And he said, look, it's not all people, but he said there are, and he is not a Trump guy, but he knows people, Latinos, who are. And he said, you know, Todd, I think you're right. He said, it is people who, even when they came here undocumented, now that they're legal and now that they have theirs, they don't want to have the same opportunity for other people, even people from their original home country. And again, Trump and MAGA are extraordinarily good at this, in tapping into this thought of, hey, you're an American now. Don't let anybody take that away from you. Don't be threatened. It's tapping into our fears, the worst of us. And again, I'll go back, and I don't mind saying, and again, to Luke Mather's point last segment, if there's anybody who detests what Scott Walker did in office, it's me. I don't even like the person Scott Walker, because I was in meetings with him and I know what kind of a guy he is. Not a good one. But what he wrote back in 2015 about appealing to the the best of us, Freudian slip, right? In 2015, Scott Walker wrote, at least, about appealing to the best in each of us, not the worst, to be for something, not against something. I'm not sure if he wrote that or a campaign operative wrote that. I'm not sure. But whoever wrote that was right. The problem is that Scott Walker and the Republican Party, the MAGA Republican Party, can't adhere to it. They've forgotten the lessons of Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush. That immigration makes us better. That we are all, unless we are Native Americans, all of us come from immigrants or a line of immigrants. And that includes recent Latinos who are now naturalized citizens or permanent residents. Shouldn't forget where you came from. Doesn't matter whether you came from Germany or Czechoslovakia or Poland or Mexico or El Salvador or Argentina. All of us have a story. And we'll get more into this another time. We'll get more into this story on ProPublica, which is talking about immigration and how much dairy farms rely on immigration here in the state of Wisconsin. 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. I don't think we have time right now. We'll come back and take more calls for you in a minute. Also, I'll probably hear from, we're going to hear from Mike Posner about his view on 2024. And then at 1:30, Matt Solomon from Cracked.com will be along and talking about a radical fix for Saturday Night Live in 2024. Don't go anywhere. This is the Todd Allball Show, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network. Wherever it may lead, and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network for a Thursday, January 4th, 2024. 20 now past the hour of 1 o'clock. Zommers on the board. Glad to have each and every one of you along with us. At 1:30 or shortly thereafter, Matt Solomon of Cracked.com will be along with us and talking about a radical fix for Saturday Night Live in 2024. Anxious to hear that. Right now, we're talking a little bit more about this immigration issue that we've been, kind of talking about the last couple of minutes here, last couple of segments. Complicated, right? But I still believe that all of us are enriched by the melting pot that is the United States of America. 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. Let's go down to Stoughton, listening in on WMDX here in Madison. CJ in Stoughton, Happy New Year, CJ. What say you?
Happy New Year, Todd. Thank you for taking my call. I really struggle. I hear you talking about being a former Republican, and there could not be a more distinct difference between the Biden policy and the Trump policy. Let me give you a couple of numbers. December of 2019, there was 40,000 illegal contacts. This is due to these are numbers from the Border Patrol. And that was the last year of the Trump policy. This December, 302,000. Now, not to mention, there's 100,000 minors that, due to this catch and release from the Biden policy, they don't know where they are. That's they're probably in the sex trade.
Just stop right there for a second. Let's just take a breath. Agree or disagree that much of the reason I don't have those numbers in front of me, but I'll take you at your word that they're accurate, that because of Title 42, which was put in place during the Trump administration, during the pandemic, that dramatically changed. There was a lot of this, people had to wait on the Mexican side before they sought asylum. According to the Constitution, anyone is entitled to come here and seek asylum. That is a matter of how they're processed. During the pandemic, because of Title 42, which was a bipartisan passed thing, people had to wait outside of the United States. So according to the law, Title 42 had to be allowed to expire. So that's part of it. I'm not going to say it's all of it, but that's part of it. So I think we have to recognize that if we're going to throw out those numbers.
Well, catch and release. Biden administration reenacted it. He ended the stay in Mexico policy that the Trump administration has implemented. On day one, he ended that policy. And the mere fact that now, all of a sudden, the Republicans are forcing the Biden administration to negotiate on money to Ukraine. So the only way they're going to do it, the only way they're going to approve that is if Biden does something about our border. We're spending millions and millions of dollars. Do you know that we sold $300 million worth of wall material, steel for $2 million?
Okay, let's just take a breath once again, CJ, let's just take a breath once again and realize that part of Catch and Release was reuniting families. And also, I'm not sure if you know anybody who's been at a detention center, an immigration detention center. I happen to. And those detention centers can be very expensive to the taxpayer. So it's actually more economical to taxpayers and better for and more humanitarian for the individuals if they're reunited with their families and in a place where their families can take care of them while they're processed versus putting in a detention center and many of them separated from their parents if they're minors. Now, have some of those minors been separated even under the Biden administration? Yes, that's true. But again, it's an attempt to have a more humanitarian approach than what was under the Trump administration. Also, I want to point out, again, we had this earlier in the show, that there is a deal right now, a compromise deal, that the Biden administration is willing to sign and is willing to provide more money and more security to the border, better known as HR 2. And Mitch McConnell in the Senate, Republican, has agreed to this. They have the votes. It is the House Republicans the Republicans can't even agree within their own party, CJ. So the question, I guess, is to, and I respect your opinion, that you are entitled to your view. The question to you and other Republicans is, do you agree with Mitch McConnell that a Republican leader that is better to have compromised with Biden and get part of these things done and then renegotiate on more? Or are you like Mike Johnson and the House Republicans where you say, no, we're not going to get anything done because we don't want to give Biden a win? Which side are you on?
That's not what Mike Johnson is saying.
Yes, he
is. He's saying if you believe that we should do something with the border and Ukraine against Russia, you're going to do something that's tangible to stop this. This president campaigned.
And Biden is saying he would do that. Biden is saying he would do that. But House Republicans are trying to shut it down.
What is his proposal?
He was willing to go through with this. Right here. House Republicans said they, right here, according to the story, House Republicans said they would only accept a border deal that resembles the hardline immigration bill passed in their chamber last year, known as HR 2, even though some Democrats and White House strongly opposed the plan and called a non-starter. Some Republicans were even more direct, suggesting that any deal should be rejected if it could bolster President Joe Biden ahead of November. This is a quote from Texas House Republican Troy Niles, N-E-H-L-S. Quote, let me tell you, I'm not willing to do too damn much right now to help a Democrat and to help Joe Biden's approval ratings. Unquote. So how can you negotiate? How can you negotiate with someone who doesn't even want to sit down at the table because they're too afraid of helping Joe Biden? They're putting politics before people.
It took 2 years for the Biden administration to even admit that this was a crisis created by them.
Oh, CJ.
And it's all about free votes.
CJ, you know what? I always appreciate your call. You have a right to your opinion. I appreciate it. I wish you a happy new year. But how about a little love, CJ? How about a little love? Let's go to because I want to get this in before you have time for it, Mr. Zombers.
Yes, we do.
All right. Let's hear from Mike Posner to set up our. Here's what CJ, all of us should think about, thinking about 2024 from Mike Posner, the great musical artist.
Feeling like they have more to give than they're giving. And I believe when you really look closely, your depression, your anger, your frustration, your sadness often are a function of your love not being expressed. I think love is like water, like it has to flow out. When it stays still, it becomes rancid and it turns to hate. All of us have to find a way to really give all we have to give. If you don't have a version and a vision of your own future that's exciting to you, you'll die inside.
So right there, see? That's what we need. Yeah, don't let the hate fill up your heart. Doesn't matter who you are. I apply that to myself. As I look to 2024, I want to let love flow to other people, compassion flow to other people, understanding flow to other people. Because when you do that, you feel better. And you just look, you know, you look at life a little bit different. You know, when you, and doesn't matter what the issue is. Immigration is one of those issues where if you look at it through compassion, first of all, and put yourself in someone else's shoes, you'll just feel better. I always feel better when Matt Solomon stops by of Cracked.com. He's going to be here at next segment. Don't go anywhere. Turn the page. Talk a little entertainment. What's going on at Saturday Night Live? Matt Solomon has a radical fix. Don't go anywhere. It's the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
And I got out of bed, had a big old cup of coffee to clear my head. Telephone ring and you wanna chat? Well, sit on down and tell me what's up with that. Ooh, yeah. What's up with that? What's up with that?
Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. That's a little What's Up With That from Saturday Night Live. The best part of that whole bit, by the way, is Jason Sudeikis in the red tracksuit, in my opinion. 34 minutes now past the hour of 1 o'clock. It is Thursday, January 4th, 2024. Zombers on the board. Welcome into our final segment of the show. And no better way to start off the new year and to end this show than with our friend and ongoing contributor from Cracked.com, Mr. Matt Solomon. Matt, thank you for being on the show once again, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. And I'm going to say that my favorite part of What's Up With That is Bill Hader's Lindsey Buckingham showing up every week to never get a chance to speak at the end.
That is really good.
Brilliant. Yeah.
And of course, Kenan Thompson plays the host, which is fantastic. So.
Yep.
A great bit. Well, Matt's joining us here because speaking of Saturday Night Live, he has written a great piece to start off the new year in Cracked.com, and you can find it where else? At Cracked, CRACKED.com, Cracked.com. The article of the title of the article is called A Radical Fix for Saturday Night Live in 2024. So, Matt, first, before we get into the heart of this story,
sure.
I mean, I'm old enough. I was alive at the beginning of SNL. I didn't really watch it. You know, I can remember Belushi and Aykroyd and those folks. But, you know, I was probably really into it, kind of the Dana Carvey era and Adam Sandler and, you know, Al Franken. Those were the shows where I would not miss an episode.
Sure. And all of those iterations of the show have something in common that has something to do with my radical fix for SNL in 2024. You know, that Aykroyd Belushi cast of Saturday Night Live, the classic cast, had 7 cast members. Though that class when Dana Carvey and Phil Hartman and Jan Hooks came in, I believe was also 7 or 8. it grew a little bit to maybe to be about 10 or 11 by the time Sandler joined the show. But right now, in 2024, if you count the guys in Please Don't Destroy, which are on the show every week, practically, so I think you should count those three dudes, there are 20 cast members on every episode. Nearly three times as many as that Aykroyd Belushi cast.
And see, I guess that's kind of my point. Is, and I guess to your point of your story, to a certain degree, I mean, I'll be honest. If I've seen two episodes this year, that I mean, I've quit watching it because I don't I don't find a lot of the bits that funny. And I also think that I don't know if it's the writing or just the, you know. Some of the people just don't do that great of impressions of politicians. I don't know what it is. I've just kind of lost interest in the show. Am I an anomaly to this, do you think?
You know, it's in the grand scheme of network television in 2024, it's still a very popular show.
Right.
But I think it tends to kind of ebb and flow in terms of its popularity or its topicality. You know, oftentimes in election years, when Tina Fey did Sarah Palin, for example, in like 2009, you know, the show was super relevant and a must-watch then. And then it, you know, it tends to happen around political things, but it also happens around talented casts. And when you've got a Will Ferrell or a Kristen Wiig or Bill Hader or someone like that. I think
Kate McKinnon. I mean,
people tend to tune in. You know, one of the dirty secrets of Saturday Night Live. If you go back and watch a complete episode from, let's say, the classic cast like 1978, there's going to be like three fantastic sketches, and then there's going to be another three that are not very watchable. And part of the problem there is they start on a Monday, and they start coming up with some ideas on a Monday, and they're putting together they're putting on a live 90-minute network show. You know, 6 days later, it's a really an incredible feat that doesn't always lend itself to 90 minutes of great comedy. But
well, you go ahead.
My solution.
Yes.
Addresses a number of the things.
I guess to lead into this, I think that's to your point in this article that you write in crack.com. We're talking with Matt Solomon, is that I think part of the reason I've lost interest is because there's just so many people that I don't know half these people, and I can't have a quote unquote funny relationship on TV. That's how sad my life is, Matt. I don't have that many real relationships. They're all on TV, you understand? And so I don't feel I could tune in and see Bill Hader on the Weekly Update do his shtick and everything that I just loved, or what's up with that on a every other week basis. They might show up every other month, and I think that it's just too many people. So what's the solution, Matt Solomon?
The solution is probably to fire half the cast. But
but Lorne Michaels has said he's not going to do that.
I don't think he's going to do that. I've proposed this in the past. And I've even said, if I have to, in Solomonian fashion, if I have to split this baby in half, I'm going to do it. I've said, here's how I would do it. But I don't think that's very realistic. I'm not going to put all of those people.
So we're not going to fire people. So what's the solution?
I think the solution is to take that Solomon approach and cut the baby in half. And what I mean is they should have two casts for Saturday Night Live, two casts that alternate every other show, two casts that then have a much more reasonable amount of time to put together a fully funny 90 minutes of comedy.
Mm-hmm. And you've divided these into color teams, correct?
I did. I mean, this is completely arbitrary. I made a team red and a team blue because team one and team two felt like, you know, I was saying one team was better than the other. I can read this. I'm going to read these two teams, and just by virtue of reading these two teams, or these two casts, just gives you a sense of the problem, because it's going to take me a minute to get through all of these people.
All right.
But let's say, the cast for one alternating week would have Colin Jost and Michael Shea on Weekend Update, Your favorite Kenan Thompson, Heidi Gardner, Marcelo Hernandez, Punky Johnson, James Austin Johnson, Sarah Sherman, and Devin Walker. That's a pretty good number
cast.
Of people. It's a good cast. It's also a good number of people. You could have a completely separate cast with maybe Ego Nwodum and Michael Longfellow doing Weekend Update, Bowen Yang, Chloe Fineman, Andrew Dismukes, Chloe Trost, Mikey Day, Molly Kearney, all three of the guys from Please Don't Destroy. And you can let the two casts go back and forth. And I've got at least four reasons why this makes sense.
But yeah, well, okay, let's explain this because, I mean, right off the bat, my knee-jerk reaction is Team Red is ahead of Team Blue from the get-go. But
good.
Explain to us, Matt Solomon from Crack.com, if you'd be so very kind, what's your first reason of why this is a good idea?
First reason gets to what you were saying. Like, sometimes you turn on the show and there's people that you don't even recognize. It's because they're on the show for literally 45 seconds every mm-hmm. couple of weeks. There is just not enough showtime to divide between this many people. There's a classic SNL writer named Alan Zweibel, who was one of the original guys. He was very close with Gilda Radner. Mm-hmm. And he talked about Lorne Michaels doing something that he said was really, 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 really brilliant in the original days of the show. He would send Dan Aykroyd out for just a minute and a half to just kind of talk about himself. Here's where I'm from. Here's what I'm doing. They had this recurring bit where Gilda Radner would sit on the edge of the stage and do this thing called What Gilda Ate. And she would just run through all the things that she ate during the week. You got to know who these people were. When Bill Murray took over to replace Chevy Chase, he had a couple of shows that weren't going very well. And Lorne sent him out just directly addressing the audience on camera, saying like, hey, I'm the new guy. I know I haven't been doing good, but give me a chance. I'm going to really try to make you laugh. But it was really important in those early days of Saturday Night Live that you got to know who these people were. Mm-hmm. And part of the reason is that we root for people that we like. We root, you know, and we come back to see them because they feel like our old friends. We just don't have the opportunity to do that anymore. There's a really fun social network account on Instagram called the Saturday Night Network, and they break down every week screen time statistics for the entire cast. Mm-hmm. They'll say like, oh, Bowen Yang got 7 minutes of screen time this week. That's a lot. There's always a good handful of people that get like 14 seconds, 36 seconds of screen time. It's just not enough time. Like, are some of these new people, it's like, I'm going to ask you, Todd, if you think Molly Kearney is funny or if you like Devin Walker. I'm going to guess you have no idea who these people are.
Molly Kearney, yes. Devin Walker, no.
Yeah, and part of the problem is they just can't get on the air.
Yeah.
So if you insist on having 20 people, these rotating casts, at least give us a chance to get to know them so that we can laugh at them.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point because, you know, some of these classic casts that I used to watch, I mean, you just, obviously, we in Wisconsin, particularly Madison, knew exactly who Chris Farley was and were rooting for him because he was a hometown kid, right? But I think that, you know, because it was well known and documented that, you know, the other cast members of that era, they hung out together and you heard about them, whether it was Entertainment Tonight or whatever, you felt like maybe you didn't actually know them, but you knew something about them and they kind of, their goofiness ingratiated them to us. And we wanted to tune in and see what kind of crazy stuff they do.
Yep.
All right. So number two of reasons that Matt Solomon of Crack.com says that splitting the cast of Saturday Night Live is a good thing. Number two.
This is the best reason, I think. I don't know if everybody knows this, but Bob Odenkirk, Better Call Saul, Bob Odenkirk, mm-hmm. was a writer on Saturday Night Live back in the 90s.
I did not know that.
In fact, he was the original writer of Chris Farley's motivational speaker.
Really?
Van Down by the River characters. Yeah. That Odenkirk and Farley developed that at Second City in Chicago.
Wow.
But Bob Odenkirk did not have a good experience at Saturday Night Live. And a big part of it was just the way the show was run. And I'm going to read a quote from his book, Comedy, 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 Drama. where he said, I used to watch Saturday Night Live and all of its last minute hurry up, out of breath production effort. And I would think, if only we could perfect these scenes a little bit. Lorne Michaels always would say, the show doesn't go on because it's ready. It goes on because it's 10:30. But Odenkirk asks, and this makes it so eminently reasonable to me. Odenkirk says, what if you could put it on because it's ready? Wouldn't that be cool?
Right.
To like put something on because you made it good? The production schedule at Saturday Night Live is just nuts. You meet the host on a Monday and you start tossing some ideas around. Tuesday night, you stay just the way they've always done it. They stay up all night long on Tuesday night. Yep. Wednesday, they all sit around a table and maybe read 50 sketch ideas and pick 20 to kind of keep developing. On Thursday and Friday, you start building sets and doing costumes. You're barely rehearsing these things before you get to Saturday. I just wrote a thing about SNL hosts who had a lousy time hosting SNL.
Oh, really?
William Shatner from Star Trek.
Yeah.
And TJ Hooker and yeah. All of his
Boston Weagle. Yeah, yeah.
All of his really just could not understand this whole process. He's just like, we're doing this show tomorrow and we don't even know which sketches we're doing yet. But what if you had 2 weeks to do it?
Right.
Todd, what if you spent an entire week writing scripts?
Yeah, it could
and
could
then
be
you
really,
had
really
an
good.
Entire week where you could work on perfecting these sketches. You could like actually rehearse them with the host. You could stuff it, and then you're like, oh, this isn't working. Okay, we can go back and rewrite it. We could find things that make it funny. I just think it would. You could sleep,
right? No, I mean,
yeah.
We're going to come back and talk a little bit more with Matt Solomon of Crack.com. How to fix SNL, a couple more ideas. It's the same premise here at the All Ball Show. We don't go on because we're ready. We go on because it's 12 noon. Back with more after this. It's the Todd All Ball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're going to end up eating a steady diet of government cheese and living in a van down by the river. Now, young man, what do you want to do with your life?
Actually, Matt, I kind of want to be a writer.
Well, la-dee frickin' da! We got ourselves a writer here. Hey, Dad, I can't see real good. Is that Bill Shakespeare over there?
Well, actually, Matt, Ellen and I have encouraged Brian in his writing.
Welcome back to the Todd All Ball Show. It is now 9 minutes before the hour of 2 o'clock. Matt Flynn, it takes over the airwaves at the top of the hour. Stay tuned for that. Right now, we are proud to have Matt Solomon from Cracked.com along with us. And of course, that cut was from the incomparable, the late, great Chris Farley and his sketch of the motivational speaker. And always great to see him perform that with his real life friend, David Spade, because just the fact that he could crack Spade up, Matt, always, that was part of the skip for me is just like, at what point was Spade going to crack?
Yeah, Farley notoriously would kind of hold stuff back in dress rehearsals. And, you know, there'd be something that he saved for the live show so that he could, you know, make a Spade or a Sandler or someone just to lose it.
And if I may interject something, I think that please. One criticism that people might have, not me, but people, right. of your idea is that having 2 weeks might take away some of that last minute magic and things happening. But if you do that, if you have everybody keep a little something extra up their sleeve, you can still get those surprising moments that aren't planned for.
That's a good point. That's a good point. It comes down to the actor, right?
If I didn't literally address in this article, I certainly considered that there is something about that fly by the seat of your pants quality that's part of the high wire act that makes Saturday Night Live, when it works, makes it really thrilling. Mm-hmm. I will say, as somebody who has done a fair number of 90-minute sketch comedy shows in mm-hmm. Madison over the years, 2 weeks is still an extraordinarily quick time to put put that kind of show together.
That is true.
And I think you would still have a lot of room for spontaneity and for figuring things out on the fly.
So, Matt,
but I think that is a good point, though.
Matt Solomon from Crack.com wrote a great article called A Radical Fix for Saturday Night Live in 2024. You can find it at Crack.com. Number one was getting to know the comics better. Number two was taking time to get it right. And we have three and four left, Mr. Solomon. Number three.
Number three, Todd, you said up top that when I read those two teams, I think you said that Team Red was definitively better than Team Blue.
In my opinion.
In your opinion. And I think that's great because I think anything that generates conversation, which team is better, Team Red or Team Blue or however, Team Aykroyd or Team Belushi or however they want to name these casts. Mm-hmm. I think anything that inspires conversation is great. I think if you're on Team Blue's cast and you keep hearing everybody talking about how Team Red is really the awesome group, when did competition ever make things worse? Like, right? Let's make them have to raise the bar to see if they can beat out, you know, which team is, which cast is doing better. I think Saturday Night Live has historically thrived on controversy. And I think if there's some controversy over which cast is better, I don't see how that hurts the show at all.
No, I agree with you on that part. Definitely that it got a little internal competition. Not that people don't work hard, but you kind of like, oh, I want our team to do better on our week versus the other ones. So, yeah, I actually really like that one. So for dividing the cast up of SNL, Blue and Red, we come down to number four, reasons why dividing this cast up into two is a good idea.
Number four is maybe there's money in it, which I think any network would be interested in these days. You know, The Daily Show right now still hasn't named a permanent host.
Isn't that crazy?
Trevor Noah. And here's what's not crazy about it. The ratings have shot up since they've gone to a series of rotating hosts who are all kind of auditioning for this job. So, you know, when it's Sarah Silverman or it's Leslie Jones or when it's Roy Wood Jr. or all it's, I think people are tuning in out of curiosity. People are tuning in to see who's going to win the competition. For whatever reason, when there's uncertainty, it's interesting. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one thing that this could do. Another thing that I'm proposing is like put a little black box theater there at 30 Rock and let on a week when a cast isn't giving shows, invite people in, charge them money to watch it, and try out 10 of these sketches.
Yeah.
Learn for yourselves. You know, the best way to find out if a sketch is good is if people laugh at it. And if the first time you're figuring that out is in dress rehearsal about an hour and a half before you're putting on a live show, it doesn't give you a whole lot of time to do anything about it.
Right.
You're always going to find, again, as somebody who's done this before, people always laugh at things that you didn't expect. And there's always things you think are going to kill that don't work. You read any history of Saturday Night Live and cast members will say the same thing. We thought this was going to be great. It didn't really work, but this thing that we thought wasn't going to really work did great. The only way you find out is by putting it on its feet and getting it up in front of real people. Why not charge people some money to do that? You've got you have another tourist attraction there around, you know, sell some SNL t-shirts. Mm-hmm.
I think that's spectacular because I've been a long time, but my sister and I took a little trip out and saw some Broadway theater, saw Kimberly Akimbo this summer. And when you're out there, you're looking for things to do. And wow, to go and be able to see these people that you see every week on national television, see them kind of try things out in real time, live, just feet from them. I'd pay money to see that. That'd be cool.
It's really difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's difficult to get tickets for Saturday Night Live. You kind of have to like write in and you're in a lottery and you might win it, but they don't tell you which week you're going to get to go. If you had doubled the chances to see, you know, to see Kenan Thompson or to see Sarah Sherman or see Colin Jost live, why not make that happen?
Right. About a minute left. We're talking to Matt Solomon of Crack.com. Matt, any final thoughts on SNL's future in 2024?
I think we're going to start hearing the drumbeat get louder about who's going to be replacing Lorne Michaels. We're in season 49 right now. You're also going to hear a lot of stuff about the 50th. I think they're going to, I think NBC has the Olympics this summer. I think they're going to tie in a lot of the SNL 50 into that Olympic coverage. It's going to be waving goodbye to Lorne Michaels, and there's going to be a lot of chatter about who's going to take over the show, Tina Fey or Seth Meyers. That's who I think it's going to.
Some saucy predictions for 2024 from Matt Solomon. Yeah. I love it. Thank you, my friend. I really appreciate it. Matt Solomon of Cracked.com. You can check out the article, Radical Fix for Saturday Night Live in 2024 at Cracked.com. Matt, thank you so much. Have a great day. Happy New Year to you. Stay tuned next.
Happy New Year, my friend.
My pleasure. Stay tuned next. Our friend Matt Flynn is next with Matt Flynn Direct. Also, thanks to Luke Mathers, Aaron Zomers, whatever you believe in. Keep fighting for it. Keep banging your drum. See you tomorrow.